This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. We will attend a protest in front of the Mexican consulate in El Paso, Texas, calling for the proper investigation, apprehension, and justice for the continuous murders of women in Juarez. And we will speak with Ruben Garcia, founder of Annunciation House, a migrant safe house in El Paso, about the possible reasons for inaction and their cumulative effects on people on both sides of the border.
My name is Michelle Otero. I'm a volunteer with the Coalition Against Violence Toward Women and Children on the Border and with Amigos de las Mujeres de Juarez. And right now we're in El Paso, Texas, outside of the Mexican consulate.
And why are we here?
We are here to remember the hundreds of women murder victims just across the border in our sister city of Ciudad Juarez and to demand justice on their behalf because they can't do it for themselves anymore.
How have these murders that have just been going on and on, increasing and increasing, affected the lives of women in Juarez?
There's a lot of fear. Unfortunately, if you look at the problem of violence against women, it's almost universal. But here, because of the murders, it's acute. And so even if the murders started off as the work of like one or two individuals or a serial killer, I think that now anyone who wants to attack a woman in Juarez, anyone who wants to kill a woman, anyone who wants to rape or abuse or murder a woman can do it because they know that there's no value on their lives, especially if they're young, especially if they're poor. So it's just, it's open season. And when you grow up with that, even if it's never talked about or it's, you know, pushed under the rug or it's not in the papers, that does something to your psyche, you know, to grow up and to know that you're not valued as a human being, you know, that at any moment your life could be taken from you and nobody would care. You know? And so we have a responsibility. Like we have to make it stop.
So how are the groups that you're affiliated with helping change that?
One of the things that the coalition here in El Paso has done is just made people aware that it's even happening. Amigos de las Mujeres de Juarez has been a really great support organization for Casa Amiga, which is the only rape crisis center in Juarez. It's a city of 1.5 million people. So they've raised money for them, and then they've been a great support organization for the families. And especially if the young women who have been murdered were working in maquiladoras, they were sometimes the main breadwinners for their families. So with them no longer there, the families are, you know, suffering really economic hardship. So Amigos has been really great about visiting the families, providing support for them, raising money for them, helping them with basic needs like food and medicines, and just building alliances with them so they know they're not alone, because it's a really isolating experience.
So why is there this hatred of women? It's a giant question.
That's the million-dollar question. I think along the border, I think because we're suffering the effects of racism and conquest, and we have this history of violence that has been, that then in a lot of ways oppresses men of color. And if you throw on top of that economic hardship, I think when men don't feel good about themselves in order to feel powerful, they turn against their women. And so I think that's an element of it. I think definitely violence happens in more affluent communities. It happens in white communities as well. But I mean, that's kind of why I talked to the men today and just said, you know, step up. Even though violence affects us as women, probably more so than it affects men, it's really men's responsibility to stop it. If they're the perpetrators, it's their responsibility to stop it and to call other men on their behavior.
Can you tell me why these murders have not really been investigated?
That's the other million-dollar question. Theories abound. There's a lack of political will in Juarez, and a lot of the families, because they are poor, they can't be advocates for themselves. They're trying to survive, so they don't have the resources to demand justice, and they don't have access to an open judicial system like we do here on this side of the border. The authorities will appoint a special prosecutor, or they'll say that they have an investigative team working on it, but really it's window dressing. There's just no will on their part to solve the murders. You know, President Fox has come down on the authorities in Juarez, but at the same time, he said, shame on you for not solving it, but it's your issue, it's not my responsibility. And the governor of Chihuahua has done the same thing. It's a local issue, and the local police will say it's a national issue, or it's a federal issue, or a state issue, so everybody just puts the blame on everybody else. And I think the other reason they haven't been solved is because the women we're talking about are mostly poor, mostly young, and they don't have political power. They don't have a voice. It's almost as though, you know, maybe if they were Americans, if they were wealthy Mexican women, if they were Mexican men, I think there'd be more of an impetus for the government and the authorities to solve them.
Why is this so important to you?
I'm a woman. Yeah, mostly I'm a woman. I'm a survivor of sexual assault. And I guess I realized at one point that as women, we deserve to do more than just survive. You know, we deserve to live our lives fully, to be comfortable in our own bodies, to be able to walk around alone at night, anytime, wearing whatever we want, and not have to worry that somebody's going to attack us, and if they do, that they'll blame us for it. And as long as women in Mexico are being murdered, I don't think women anywhere are safe.
Eleanor Ostrinsky spoke with Ruben Garcia, founder of Annunciation House, a migrant safe house in El Paso, about the possible reasons for inaction and their cumulative effects on people on both sides of the border.
The death of the women here on the border over the last 10, 15 years reflects several phenomena. First, it reflects the phenomena of a city that mushroomed overnight with not the resources to provide basic security for the community. It reflects a city that is dependent on police forces that are woefully underpaid and so become very susceptible to all the corrupting forces that happen in any community with low-paid law enforcement. You have the phenomena of very few social service resources to deal with tremendous pressure on families and family and domestic violence. So you look at this over the years, and you have the death of women, which is caused by domestic violence, significant others who are able to beat and kill their female partner and get away with it by taking the body and dumping the body in the desert. You have the phenomena of violence against women in the form of robbery, rape, murder that simply gets included within this general environment of violence. You have what is almost without question some aspect of serial killings that are going on in an environment like Juarez, where it is so easy to lose yourself. And so the effect that this has on both communities is the tremendous negation of the inherent value of the woman. It degrades, it devalues the life, it makes women disposable. And I think that to a certain extent, it is possible to kill and to get away with it. Law enforcement is so handicapped. And this has been one of the reasons why there has been such tremendous political media efforts to focus the light so that the resources can be applied on a binational level. There's reason to believe that there are serial killers at work, that it's very conceivable that it could be people who live in the U.S. side of the border and cross over to do the killings. There is the element of the drug trafficking that goes on. And so one of the things that I think has happened on both sides of the border is a sense of that's the way that it is, an acquiescence to a horror, because even though it's happened in such great numbers, it is still not numbers great enough to galvanize a larger part of the population into action. You know, it's kind of the the proverbial, as long as the drugs were kept on the other side of the tracks and it only affected the families or the children of people on the other side of the track, quote unquote, there was very little concern. When the drugs started coming across the tracks and it started affecting the middle and the upper classes, then, so there's that kind of a phenomena.
Is the migration up from the interior of Mexico to Juarez also a factor in allowing killings to happen and having those women essentially be
anonymous,
forgotten?
Sure. Given the tremendous internal migration that has happened, almost everyone that is in Juarez is an internal immigrant. And I think that that's part of the mushrooming of the city. You create an environment where people get lost, and it's very difficult to then find them.
Do you know how has it affected the lives of women in Juarez? And in turn, how has it affected the lives of women in El Paso, as the border is just two blocks away?
Certainly in Juarez, it makes women much more cautious, much more aware of when they're out, who they're with, and how they make their travel plans. It has raised many questions about the kind of responsibility that the maquila industry will assume for their workers and how they get them home, what times they get released, what parts of the city they have to navigate. And so that's very present in the minds and the lives of women in Juarez, and it has affected and changed how they go about doing things as a result of that. On the El Paso side, I think that the most common effect has been, oh, I would never go over to Juarez. Oh, no, that's too dangerous. It's a dangerous place for women.
Killing women because they are women is a worldwide problem. Juarez is just one acute example. What would you do to change the situation in your community and beyond it? Tell us what you think. Log on to the Voices of Our World webpage, www.maryknoll.org. There's a spot there for your feedback. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Mary Knoll Priest, Paul Masson, Judy Code, Irma, Marissa Silva, Michelle Otero, and Ruben Garcia are just some of the Voices of Our World. Voices of Our World is a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. Our producers are Eleanor Ostrinsky and Kathy Golden. Our executive producer is Larry Rich. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. For information on Amigos de las Mujeres de Juarez, go to www.juarezwomen.com. For more information on the Mary Knoll Office for Global Concerns, go to www.marynollogc.org. We'd like to thank Lila Downs, who performed La Llorona. Please go to her website, www.liladowns.com. If you'd like to receive a free 3-month subscription to Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, call 1-888-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-888-MARYKNOLL. If you have any questions about Mary Knoll or our program, call 1-888-MARY-KNOLL. If you missed a portion of the show, just catch us on Mary Knoll's website, www.marynoll.org. And please be sure to join us next time for more Voices of Our World. Si tú me cantas, yo siempre vivo.